It is Thursday, the 16th of January, and this is episode 193 of Digital Outbox. Happy New Year! I'm Chris, joined as ever by Ian. Hello, Ian.
Good evening, Christopher. Happy New Year, but it's far too late to be. I mean, it's the 16th of January. Come on.
Yeah, we're a bit late. We were supposed to have a podcast last week, but things cropped up.
Real life and apathy got in the way.
Yeah, but it just means that we've got lots more fun and games to talk you through this week. Is that right?
Well, as long as it involves BlackBerry failing and Blockbuster failing,
yeah. If you find that fun, then you're going to have a lot of fun right now, because we're going to start with a summary of the kind of things that have been happening since we've been away. So we've obviously been off air for about a month now, isn't it? So what's been going on? So BlackBerry, in some sort of death throes, I guess. They're trying to team up with Foxconn, and they're trying to sell effectively cheap units into emerging markets is their kind of bit like the cigarette industry now trying to go to third world countries. They're now trying to pimp their phones over there because they cannot sell in the West, it seems.
No, but they're dead.
I'm more and more
convinced that they're dead. I'm sure enterprise-wise there'll still be lots of people hanging on in there, but even near, certainly at our place, we're seeing lots of people saying, I don't want this anymore. You know, the
only phones they're selling, they're not selling their BlackBerry 10. They're selling their old handsets, the ones that the old fogies still think, oh, I like that, I want to just keep another one of them.
I mean, it's unbelievable, because it was Z10 was their latest one, and it's one of their poorest sellers ever. And that says it all. All the money they've spent on putting that out, and it's failed. Yep. Failed miserably.
But I mean, there's still a lot of money sloshing around, but it's just going to prolong that death, I think. Anyway, but maybe the emerging market, they'll play a part in that. You know,
I think that they're like a Sega. The hardware's dead, but they'll continue as a software platform.
Yeah. We also saw the end of Blockbuster. Finally, they threw in the towel, basically. They realised that the model doesn't work in competition with all the other kind of streaming and stuff. And on demand. So that was it. That was the end of Blockbuster.
It was a sorry end, because every week they just shut another like 200-300 stores, and then it was like, yeah, we're done.
It was such a big part of, you know, life at one point, wasn't it? It's another thing, just shows things move on.
Yeah, I guess so. For me, it was always Azad Video. Azad Video was the local video store. Right, so I always remember Azad Video.
Okay, fair enough.
Azad Video, and they had a little stool for the top shelf stuff, so the old guys could come in and get up and meet you. That's class.
What the customers want. okay, also been rumbling on since we last spoke has been the default on porn filters. So the government coming along and saying, right, we want porn filters to be default on to protect the kids. And BT has turned their version of that on. So it is up to each individual provider to turn, or, you know, put in place filters or turn them on. BT for new customers has now turned that on. And surprise, surprise, it's caused all manner of issues. If you're an existing customer, you will be asked at some point whether you want to continue to have porn. Porn and sex education websites and all manner of other informational sites, which also get caught up in their filter.
And this is the thing. So I think headlines, and we talked about it. Loads of people talked about it when this was all passed last year. That this is going to, you know, it's a recipe for disaster.
Yep. How do you automatically rape crisis versus rape video? You know.
Yeah, and this is the thing. So and everybody's talked about this porn filters, but then when you look at the actual BT filters and the categories that were there, it's amazing. Like, but how much is actually there? It's not just, well, clearly it's not just porn. It's a whole load of different topics. And I mean, I've just jumped in the BT site. You know, pornography. So this is different categories. Pornography, drugs, alcohol and tobacco, hate and self-harm, nudity, weapons and violence, gambling, dating, social networking, file sharing, games, media streaming, obscene and tasteless, fashion and beauty, homework, search engine and portals and sex education.
So it's almost like Vice, isn't it? That's the kind of topics they're talking about. But that's not just the porn filter. That's censoring, isn't it? Censorship.
On a massive, massive scale. Mm. And this was the issue that affected so many sites. You know, so you've already mentioned, I think it was Edinburgh Rape Network was blocked. There's a whole other sex education and sex help sites. You know, so if you're...
Yeah, and advice and, yeah.
Yeah, you know, so if you're, you know, confused, need help, all that kind of stuff was getting blocked. And again, all ignored by the government. You know, they tried to, people on Twitter... sent them emails, tried to talk to people like Claire Perry, who was a big advocate of it, just ignored, because they'll just, you know, just talk over the top and say it's a great day for, you know, parents of Britain, you know, this is protecting their kids.
You know, the same rules that say it's protecting us from terrorists, which mean that we get spied on, we'll come onto that again later. It's the same kind of thing here. You protect the kids, and no one can argue with that. But when you actually look down and see what they are blocking, because they are going to use their filters for IP blocking, you know, on a requested basis. Yes. So it's a great way that the government have now put in the filters, have required all the companies to turn them on, and now can use them to block other stuff. So proxies and you know, and torrent sites and anything they fancy or don't like the sound of anywhere that's been serving up you know, content or has been alleged to be serving up content. So
I mean, the one that got a lot of press was the one around sex education, because initially the text on the BT site said it would block sites with the main purpose to provide information on subjects such as respect for a partner, abortion, gay and lesbian lifestyle, contraceptive, sexual determinants, disease and pregnancy. And as many people pointed out, it was almost a stealth Section 28. So Section 28 was all about, you know, let's make it illegal to talk about these things.
We consider normal.
Yep. Yeah. And in some ways this is given, we just need to wait and see. There's so many people are uneducated about this. This is my problem with it being, you know, default on. So many people are uneducated and just won't understand what this is.
Not only that, it's every single provider is going to be doing their own thing in their own way. And it's only a requirement of the biggest providers, and it's only been a voluntary service and a code anyway. So everything's going to be different. Different things are going to be blocked. It means that the internet isn't the internet anymore. It's a different, you know, different portal depending on how you access it. And also we've got the get around. So we've got new plugins, things like Chrome's Go Away Camera and Filter. You can install that and it will theoretically unblock all the block sites. But then again, if your provider's doing network shaping or network sniffing, it could block that kind of thing as well.
Yes, but it will open up most of the things. This is a problem. You know, kids are far more educated than parents. I know that from experience. Not
yeah, the parents going to think, oh, I've done my job.
Yeah, exactly.
The government said I've blocked porn.
Yes.
Little kids got a Go Away Camera installed on their Chrome.
And nobody will know until the parent goes, oh, surely that site's blocked. O2 got a bit of flack as well, because O2 I've had for ages. O2 have blocked sites on their mobile browser, and they had to phone up and say I'm over 18 and all that kind of nonsense. But because it was public, it got a lot of people trying websites, you know. So I actually looked up, you know, like Digital Outbox blocked. We were listed under a certain category, and it's just amazing what you get categorized. It was basically, there's a whole load of sites. The only sites
we're very racy.
Yeah, the only, well, the only sites that were really,
we're both naked.
Don't tell people that. I told you. It's the nipples, man. The thing that was open were shopping sites. Everything else was basically blocked.
Right.
And I mean everything. It was basically shopping sites were the only ones that were open, which was bizarre. But they've had that for ages, and O2 got a lot of stick for it, but at least they put in a way of checking. Eventually, I think they removed it, because so many people were just saying, hold on, this site's blocked, this site's blocked, this site's blocked, this site's blocked.
And it's not like you can just incrementally ask for them. It's either on or off. And that's the thing with this porn filter as well. It's either on or off. It's not like, you know, there's a halfway house. It's just one or the other. So if you find that one of the sites you do want to use is blocked, you've got to unblock it. Then everything's unblocked. Anyway, Pirate Bay found a nice solution to their issues. So Pirate Bay constantly being heckled, abused, chased around the world via their server networks. by governments and media enterprises not wanting them to share stuff. But they have come up with a solution whereby they will, it's basically native software. We're going back to native software rather than distributed networks. And that native software will hold most of the site, and it will then use peer-to-peer technologies, but without seemingly without sort of major peers, that will then share the actual data around. So pretty much it's almost a private network using a distributed network of IPs. There's not going to be an individual IP that someone can say, you could have shut that down.
And it basically means, I think, you're basically everybody, every individual is kind of hosting Pirate Bay.
Yes. So and you can get it from Joe Blogs next door or Joe Blogs in Russia. So if media people want to shut down that kind of network, they have to, well, there's no easy way of doing it because they can't just say there's an IP address I want to block here, because it just will not work. So we'll see if that gets it around for them. That's the thing. By media harrying them and hounding this, it's just going further and further away, and they can't do anything about it now.
Yes.
It's an incredibly big problem. It's getting more of a problem for them rather than less.
Yes.
Gmail got a lot of stick probably a couple of weeks ago now about how they're working their new Google Plus and how they're connecting Google Plus in with your Gmail and email addresses that you may have got stored locally. And the problem was that they would allow you to send an email to anyone on Google Plus once. You never got to... I mean, there was initial people really stressing out, going, oh, are you giving them my email address? And they're not. They're just saying, one time you can email this person at their email address. And if they reply to you, then we'll give them access to your email address.
Yes. So it wasn't as damaging as everybody made out. There was lots of hoo-ha, lots of business as usual. But there was. And it's dead easy to turn it off as well.
You could go and opt out. The thing was, should it have been an opt-in thing initially? But what it does is it makes Google Plus just an extension of Google Mail, which is, if you use both services, it kind of makes sense to do that.
Yeah. And another thing is, I must admit, at first I was like, that's a bit nasty that it's not an opt-in. But A, nobody would have turned it on. And B, they did email and tell you, we've just enabled this, here's how to control it. So unlike a lot of services, when they make changes like Facebook, and some of the Apple stuff, they did actually say, this has been enabled, take a bit of ownership.
And that's why I think Google get this, they have these real tiny minor storms, not like Facebook had a big backlash. I'm not saying a backlash in numbers, but I'm saying a backlash in continuously getting slated. Google tends to have these little bubbles where they release a service, everyone goes, oh, actually, it's not too bad.
The other thing, everybody slags off Google Plus for being dead. And here's a way of going into Google Plus and emailing somebody, and everybody goes, rah! So you can't have it both ways.
I know, they get taken the piss out of. But if you actually look at usage statistics, because of the way they're kind of integrating it into everything they do.
Yeah, but if you use YouTube, you're using Google Plus.
Exactly. That's exactly it. Exactly.
Yeah. That's a big con.
Now, they've also bought Boston Dynamics. Now, Boston Dynamics was on my YouTube subscription list anyway, because they make some awesome robots. Pretty frightening robots when they're called Boston Dynamics, and they do weaponize some of their things.
And this is the thing. So, like, see the story. Google's bought another company. You just think, yeah, okay, it'll be some crazy moonshot type thing. Remember all the kind of, we'll have balloons in the air that can do your internet and all that kind of nice world future stuff. No, these are like 30 mil an hour, we'll hunt you down and kill you robots.
Walking robots that you can like push and they kind of stumble a bit and then they'll recover and they will Terminator relentlessly follow. They are just awesome things to behold if you go and watch their kind of robots. So go and have a look on YouTube for Boston Dynamics and you'll see the robots.
Look up Big Dog.
Yeah. I have to say, I'm happier that Google have bought this company than pretty much anyone else. Because I don't yet think that Google are going to weaponize.
No, but and the thing, I at the end of the story, just put Skynet, because Boston Dynamics do have weapons contracts right now, which Google have to honour. So Google right now are a weapons manufacturer.
Yes. But that's why I think it's better that they've got it than anyone else. But the places they, if you again what look on YouTube, but the places they work at look awesome. They have these whole rigs where they go and just generate these robots. It must be amazing.
But as you said, the ones where it's like somebody, you know, is walking like a human, and they're going up and pushing it, or they're running into it, and it's recovering. That's fantastic.
Because it's not that long ago where, you know, they couldn't walk like a human at all, and then it was because there was a whole competition to walk like a human robot, and now they can actually walk over boulder fields and still, you know, balance, and it's absolutely incredible to watch. It's just amazing.
The one that runs fast, which is called, I don't know, the cheetah.
Yes.
The scary thing about that is the noise it makes. Yeah. And this thing starts up and it's like, and then it's just like, and in my head, it's like, it's coming.
Yeah.
And I think what I want to do is make like a running app and just have that sound. And it's just nice and slow. And then it starts getting faster.
Yeah, your second mile was definitely faster than your first mile. Yeah.
Yeah.
So go and have a look at them. Google have bought them, and who knows what they're going to do with them. They're talking about, you know, elderly care. They're talking about all sorts of things.
So you're not worried by this? You're not worried at all?
Like I say, there's many companies that I'd rather Google had it than anyone else. But then, you know, I'm a bit of a Google fanboy, really.
Skynet.
Google have also they've also bought Nest. Now, this caused a bit of a stink, didn't it? What's that all about?
See the kind of snide bit of me? I love this.
So what does Nest do?
So Nest basically have launched two products. So about 3 years ago, they launched the first product, just called Nest. So it was an intelligent thermostat. So this was launched by a chap called Tony Fadell. And his notoriety is that he was the guy behind the original iPod. So he worked at Apple. He was the designer of the original iPod. Many people have called him the father of the iPod because it was his designs. A bit like now Johnny Ive is all behind the, you know, iMac and all that kind of good stuff. But Tony Fadell was Mr. iPod. He launched Nest, beautiful looking product. If you look at thermostats that we're all used to, white bit of tat on the wall with a crappy little LCD panel, whereas this thing is a round, internet-enabled... intelligent.
You talked about this, I'm sure. When
I love the look of them, yeah. And I still.
I remember you saying you wanted one.
Oh, I still want one. You compare it. You compare it to I think British Gas do one. Is it called Hive? Which is three horrible like white boxes to hook it up. This thing just like hooks to Wi-Fi. British Gas's option is a bit that connects to your router. Another bit to act as a bridge between the white bit of plastic that's in the router and the LCD thing that's on the screen. And it's like, you could not have made more tat than this compared to Nest.
That's the Asus to the Apple.
Yeah, so that was our first product. Works in Android, works in iOS. Got lots of great press. Their second product was Nest Protect.
The smoke alarm, wasn't it?
Which was a $120 or £100 smoke alarm, which was... They've tried to make it intelligent. Again, it talks to you. So you're at your work, your house is on fire. Get a little alert.
I'll just stop what I'm doing.
I kind of think I would rather, can you phone 999 rather than letting me know, just so I can say I'm in a meeting. Can you interrupt me later on, please? But there's also things like, you know how your smoke alarm, the battery goes and it starts chirping, usually at like 3 a.m.
Yes.
This does a little kind of light glow. So it kind of warns you by like more subtle means. And it's all about...
So it's taking everyday products and trying to refine them down.
So that's their two products, right? Mm. They're a 300 strong company and Google's paid $3.2 billion in cash.
Yeah.
Which is phenomenal. Wow. And see the bit I liked about this? So see, since these products came out, lots of Apple people loved them because it was... Apple-esque, you know, yes. They were sexy.
That's the kind of design philosophy, yeah.
Yeah, magical, you know, taking something and making it, you know, super easy to use. Obviously, the guy's got his Apple ties as well. So for Google to buy them, I've loved
ruffled
it.
Some feathers.
I've loved the reaction on Twitter. I've loved the blog posts from people that have in the house saying, I'm taking out my nests. Google will not be in my house. Well, there was all the jokes. Google now knows when I'm home. And it's like they probably knew that anyway. Google can now, you know, next thing they'll be saying is, oh, look, he sets his temperature at this. You know, maybe we should sell him some adverts that are like, you know, all sorts of nonsense. Sort of hot, some stuff about Google+.
We noticed your battery's running low. We've got offers on batteries.
For whatever reason, Google right now in privacy, they're number one hate target.
They are the hate target, even though Facebook are
exactly
sending your data everywhere.
No, exactly. I chuckle so much. There's a couple of folk on Twitter that I follow, and they proclaim every day how it's great to use, you know, DuckDuckGo, and I've moved to Fastmail. We've stopped using Google. Follow me on Facebook. And it's like they're the worst company ever, and you're worried about Google. It's bizarre. So Google have bought Nest. It's seemingly going to fall between YouTube and Motorola as to how invasive Google are going to be in running the company.
So a little bit more hands-on than Motorola. Is it Motorola? They kind of left to it, didn't they?
Yeah. And YouTube obviously became totally bought in and exactly. branded and all that kind of stuff. Everybody thought Apple would have bought them. You know, it was almost like right for a buyout, but that amount of money is phenomenal.
Yeah, big money. The only thing
I was going to add is, because lots of people are saying, like, why that much? But 2 years ago, Google did that. Remember they did that Google, remember at one of the Google IOs, it was like Google at Home, and it was going to be all these Android devices around. Where is it? There's nothing. It's just vapor. And at least these guys have got something out there. And I'm just wondering.
And they've probably got a direction and a roadmap.
Yeah. Because I love all this home automation idea, but it's expensive and it's all fragmented. So if Google could turn around and give a kind of total, you know, here's a solution for it all, I'd be there.
Yeah. Okay, that's EE. They've now got over 2 million 4G subscribers. So last time we talked to you, about 1 million. So they've actually done quite nicely. So 14 months they've taken to get to 2. But now we've got all the other people coming on board. So let's keep it. Well, we'll see how they get on. But they've certainly, it was worth them coming out early.
Absolutely.
They've got a big share there.
Yes.
At least for the first, you know, probably 24 months, which is what people have to sign up for those kind of contracts.
And they're a lot faster than the other offerings as well.
Yes, they've got themselves sorted. Because they've had the most advanced network, didn't they? With all the because they combined the two together.
And a little bit of anecdotal evidence: they are doing deals. So in local stores, if you pop in at the right time, there's some cracking deals. One of the guys at work picked up a 8 gig one for the same price as 3.
Wow! Yeah.
Which was like, how did you get that? He
says, that makes that it usable deal. Versus not usable, really, doesn't it?
Yeah. He says that was the deal they were offering that weekend.
Yep. Okay.
So.
Instant messaging overtook SMS, which is amazing. And they reckon this year it's going to be like a 2-to-1 ratio. So we send billions of SMS messages. It fell to 145 billion messages, and that's down 7. So we send an awful lot of SMS messages, but it looks like IM's, you know, taken over. I guess as more people are data connected everywhere, it just means that that's a simpler way of doing it. You don't have a 10p charge every time you want to do an SMS. And IM is free, basically.
Absolutely.
It keeps on your data plan, obviously. But.
And it's things like WhatsApp, Line, I guess, BlackBerry Messenger coming out everywhere, Facebook Messenger. It's
Google Talk now is across, you know, all your SMS and then into your wherever you're working at the time. So, yeah, it's...
I was going to say FaceTime, but not FaceTime, iMessage. Doesn't work.
But it's the same idea. Just not a good one. right, so spying, we talked about this earlier, sort of came back into the news today, isn't it? Because they've NSA or the Channel 4 and the Guardian have basically done some digging around, and it turns out that the NSA is scraping 200 million text messages every single day, just randomly and globally.
And that was 2 years ago, so I can only assume it's a significant factor more now.
A gold mine of information.
Yep, and this program is called Dishfire.
So basically, yeah, and it turns out the GCHQ, so the UK's version, have been using that database to, again, just randomly check and mine that data. Because what they're doing is the data's being stored and they're running algorithms on it, basically, looking for links and looking for who's talking to who. But there's an awful lot of information in it. So there's contact information, there's financial information, there's all sorts, you know, anything you send via text. And don't forget, people pay things by text. There's, you know, text to pay for things.
The scary thing is, this is the average each day that they were extracting. 5 million missed calls alerts, which was useful for contact chaining. You know, so if you could see that somebody's contacted somebody and they've missed a call, so you knew that those persons are connected in some way. Yeah. 1.6 million border crossings because of the network roaming alerts. 110,000 names per day from electronic business cards.
Mm. And that can be linked to pictures, and they can link it to your device, and therefore they can link it to location, all sorts.
800,000 financial transactions and geolocations. And that was 2 years ago, 76,000. I can only assume that's far more now, especially as they've been mining all the kind of messaging apps as well. They'll be getting far more in tweets. You know, you just think about how open we are with things like that now.
Your protection, Ian.
Yeah, but we are tracked big still. And this was a controversial
hope
thing.
Hope you feel
tonight.
Safe.
I don't feel any safer that knowing that they do this than I did before. It's just the fact that there will be an Ian Dick user account there, and it will tell them everything that I do. They probably know that I had a fantastic crap tonight. It was one of the best ones I've had all week. Actually, I tweeted about it with my geolocation, so they could know exactly where my toilet is.
There's obviously massive arguments either way on this, but the extent of this. It's going beyond even fiction, basically.
It is. Did you see the one last week that came out about the American spying, that they've now, that the technology they've got does allow them to spy on lots of computers that are non-networked, not connected to the internet in any way whatsoever. Wow. And it's all radio wave.
They can actually pick up on the internal signals.
So embedded in USB chips, embedded in USB cables. Embedded on some motherboards, you know, you just see all these hundreds of chips and go, oh, impressive. Lots of them are little radio transmitters. And seemingly the Chinese, the Americans last year were really annoyed that China was doing it in America. They said it was, no, this is active war type stuff. We're really hacked off at this. When this came out last week, what do you expect with a spy agency?
I mean, there was, I know there was all sorts of fury. I don't even know how recent it was. It's probably not that recent, but they are the company behind the kind of online digital certificates encryption. The RSA key. I can't remember. They took a payment from the NSA.
$10 million.
Yeah, that was never explained what it was, what it was meant for. They've claimed that they never gave away any secrets, but what was argued was that they may have used an easier encryption technology that could be circumvented or at least had known vulnerabilities, rather than using a stronger one. Anyway, that's by the by, and it's a bit, you know, that was a bit hearsay, wasn't it? But I know that there was all sorts of stuff kicked off.
Well, no,
there.
it was all part of this, you know, NSA documentation, and it was a clear $10 million for a backdoor. And RSAF came out and said, bollocks. And they have to, so many companies rely on RSA, you know, for their remote dialing capabilities. And they've got a little key pops up. So many financial institutions are using it. You know, because I think a lot of people are using that technology to now securely get into their bank account. You know, you get your little token and you can, you're nice and secure. And it looks like it's a load of rubbish. They've come out and said, you know, definitely not. But so many security experts were like,
they said there were a different way. You could have gone for this method that was secure, and there's a weird $10 million payment, and you chosen one with vulnerabilities.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's move on. Smart parking sensors. This is London Westminster. They are going to add sensors to parking bays. And you'll have an app which you can use to direct you to the nearest vacant parking bay.
Excellent.
At which point you find another car was also on that way. and it's like they've got there first.
I do kind of think, because they're saying that on average somebody spends 15 minutes looking for a parking space in that area. So I can only assume it's very congested, because that seems a long time. Yeah, exactly. It seems a long time. And I'm sure if you're one of those drivers, you'll have a smartphone and you'll get that app and you're all been out chasing after. Oh, there's a space, go!
Or actually it might direct more traffic there, because they think, well, that's the place where I can find parking space because I've got an app. But they reckon that if it's successful in Westminster, then they're going to roll it out for the rest of London. And I'm
certainly
sure will follow.
San Francisco have got them. And what they also do is they intelligently set prices as well. So in their busy areas and their quieter areas, they can adjust the prices to try and help traffic as well. So adjust the price and say, well, actually, if you can go here, it's a bit further away, but it's far cheaper and it helps some of the congestion. So I can certainly see the benefit from it.
Yeah, and it's, again, it's another, you know, bit of connection that makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Nintendo. 3DS game sales up 45%. So Wii U may be a bit of a flop. I say a bit of a flop in a kind of underestimating how much of a
PS3,
flop it was.
PS4 is already outsold Wii U.
Yeah. Yeah. They didn't. but 3DS games, people still gagging for it. And it has got the kids' imaginations, basically. Still a Christmas gift.
Exactly. And I think as well it was helped by some really good titles. So there was Legend of Zelda. That was about it. And there was Animal Crossing. And,
Vita's never captured that market.
The Vita was a little bit more expensive, and I think, again, it suffered from where's the killer titles? And it's the same, we just talked about it before the start of the recording. We've got Xbox Ones, where's the killer? There's none of the games that have come out for either platform has been like, oh, that's going to sell the system.
No.
Forza kind of did it for us, but we've not played it.
No. It's boring. Release games rarely are the killer ones because you get the early adopters. It's normally the next wave. I think Xbox One was a bit unusual in that Halo was that killer app released.
But I think Microsoft needed that because everybody poo-pooed them as console
and
makers.
If it hadn't been for Halo, which they did a very good job buying that.
Yes, exactly.
PC gamers have been waiting for that for years.
Yeah, well, it was Mac. It was a Mac
was it?
Game. It was all the different Mac worlds that kept on showing Halo. And then one of the Mac worlds was just after it. Microsoft have bought it, Xbox exclusive. And it was like, no!
There we go.
Usually we dump all over Nintendo, and quite rightly too. But there you go.
They've still got a massive portfolio of gaming. Even if their hardware fails, their software could continue, and they will live on.
And for all my dump on them, I love them. I've spent more probably. If I look through my life, I've probably spent more hours playing classic Nintendo games than anything else.
And you want them to do well. And the Wii, as much as we didn't, it wasn't the thing for us, as a sales phenomenon, it sold incredibly. So it's only that, you're only as good as your last product. That's the problem, isn't it? They saw the Wii tailing off, and the Wii U just hasn't grabbed that market again.
No, and the Wii U, bit of a dump. The 3DS, and certainly when I've seen, Shacks, it looks okay. But again, it's that sweet spot of 3D. It can get a bit tiring. The game's maybe not the best.
Most people turn the 3D off.
Yep. But that 2DS they brought out is just a turkey. When I look at that, and I know it was cheaper and stuff, it just looks a
mess. I'd be interested to see what the sales are after Christmas. No one's talked about it that I've heard of, but interested to see. I've not seen any in the wild.
No, it's a bit like gold iPhones.
Yeah. Right. It was CES as well. We sort of said that we're going to come back to CES and see all the nice gadgets that were going to be released. But really, what did you think of CES? I didn't pay that much attention because nothing grabbed me. There were no headlines that sucked me in.
I guess I paid attention, because of the sites that I follow and the stuff, the podcasts that
they churn, yeah.
Exactly. So you can't not see it. If you follow and gadget sites, I'm just now down to the verge because it's like they cover everything for me. I don't need to follow everything. If something interesting is done elsewhere, they're actually really good at saying, this is really good in Gizmodo. Go and read it. So follow the verge. And lots of TVs, bizarrely now curved. lots of TVs.
Like, shit, 3D didn't work. Think of another thing. Something else. Curved. Yes, that's it.
Curved. And
curved
4K.
And 4K.
Yeah. And some of the TVs did look, admittedly, gorgeous.
Absolutely.
Really, really good. But I'm not going to buy an 85-inch TV. But Samsung, to the credit, were doing curved 55 inches, which is like, oh, okay.
That's within the realms of what's possible, what's sensible.
Yeah, it's bigger than you, right enough. But it's but it's just another thing was 4K.
Yeah, 4K is massive at the moment. But that's their next thing to pimp anyway.
Well, the thing was, there's a couple of manufacturers says we're not doing 3D anymore. We've just dropped it.
Yeah, because it doesn't sell. It
doesn't sell, and it's costing them money to throw it in every device. Nobody's buying 3D Blu-rays. Nobody's broadcasting 3D anywhere. Sky's still plucking away with one channel, which has limited content on it.
Because they reduced down, didn't they? They had more content now gone down.
Well, it's one of my friends picked up a 3D TV just for Christmas, and he watched some 3D Blu-rays and was really disappointed.
It's just it's gimmicky. It's quick to get over it. And I think the actually curved TV could work better, especially if it's even more curved. You know.
Well, the interesting thing, he found a lot of the movies rubbish, and I says, but you'll probably find they weren't shot in 3D, so they've done that in coding afterwards, and it always looks a bit crap. Yeah. And he says the best bit was he says Sky had a football game in 3D. I says, but they shoot it in 3D. Just so you're going to get a much bigger effect. And he's like, oh, that is it. He says, I'll probably, and they went home and checked,
versus,
did a bit of Googling. And yeah, the films he was watching were all post-processed. None of them shot in 3D. So it's like, what a faff.
Yeah. But yeah, so, I mean, 4K is again, the ever increasing data. You know, you get fatter pipes and they fill them.
So, and I threw some, I'm just, I need to apologise to you. I just threw loads of notes in here just all around it. But I think Amazon and Netflix have committed this year to broadcasting. Sony have committed to broadcasting, but then admitted after their main shows that really we won't see 4K to probably 6 years' time. You know, they're talking about it now, but it's,
and you can understand,
so
you
far
can understand
away.
That. But is it going to be the same thing again where, you know, from when you play standard definition signals on a high def, it's horrible. So sending an HD signal to a 4K TV, is that going to be equally as nasty? I probably.
And if I look at the current consoles, although they've said, yeah, we can do 4K, no, you can't.
No, not yet.
Well, Xbox One can't. It can't do 1080p, so it's not going to
do 4K.
You can do
it as an compressed mess, you know, with artifacts probably. But yeah, you're right. But yeah, I'd say it's fair that they're going to have to prepare for this. But the fact is that if you stream a 4K TV show through Netflix, I mean, I use up 200 gig a month just watching Netflix as I do, or I have been over Christmas when, you know, the times when I just continuously stream it. And that's 200 gigs easy without breaking a sweat. So trying to, this is four times the bandwidth of that. You know, it's just mental.
But the bit that does me is it should be four times the bandwidth, but they're saying it's only double.
Yeah, which means
of their
that it's
new
a bit
encryption
like the
methods.
You know, when we moaned at the HD channels on Sky because they were horrible.
And that's what it's going to be, lots of banding.
But things got better. Sky got better. But yeah.
Is that not their advert? Believe in better. So go on for you. CES, what else was there?
There was nothing about games there. There was no.
There was the crazy Sony. So crazy Sony did a few things. Right?
They got their streaming service.
Yeah. So what's that? PlayStation Now.
Yes. So they bought that the other technology. They were gonna
Gaikai.
That's it. So they were gonna do this inside for PlayStation 4, so you could stream stuff. That's kind of what they are doing. They're kind of saying that's going to be available soon.
Yeah, and so I think what they demoed was if you buy a Bravia TV this year, or you've got a PlayStation 4 or a PlayStation 3 or a Vita, there's some point this year you can subscribe to PlayStation Now, and you'll be able to play PlayStation 3 games and others. So they've not really committed to what's coming from PlayStation 2 or 1.
And is this that you can stream inside your own network, or is it also the service where you go and you're into a farm of games?
Oh, it's in a farm.
Yeah, okay.
So it's getting played, you know, whatever.
So it's not just
played.
Slingboxing your own console to another room. It's actually
that's that. Remember they had a little unit. Remember was it Sony Play TV? Remember the thing that launched in Japan alongside the PS4 or will?
Yeah,
launch
I remember.
It?
Yeah, I was gonna say will do.
Yeah. Yeah, that's their kind of slim box type thing. So this is basically it sits in a server. And the games that they demoed, it was like God of War and Last of Us. So really, you know, three or four games from the last year. And lots of people were saying played fantastically well. Very little lag. Clarity was great. Didn't really realise, you know, they were streaming over the internet.
Almost like they were streaming from next door.
Which they were. So they were slightly concerned about internet access. And so the Gaikai server was basically the next hall.
But it was still over the waves.
Absolutely. And time will tell. Time will tell. But it's and I guess I think what people are going to be disappointed with is because lots of people are saying, yeah, we can play our old games. It's like, yeah, you'll subscribe to play your old games. You're not going to be able to play your old game for nothing.
No, of course. Yeah, exactly. And you know, as much as server farms reduce overrunning costs, they're still running a computer on your behalf. So it's not like it's going to be. What was the name of that service that, I don't know if it's even disappeared, the one that did BT buy it?
OnLive.
Yeah, that's it. I don't know if that's even still going, but they got further than we ever gave them credit for. So this is the thing. And Sony are obviously trying to make it into more of a thing. Wearables was the kind of CES buzzword, has been for a while, but Pebble came and updated their Pebble. They've turned it metal rather than plastic and made it a little bit smaller.
Yeah, so Pebble Steel, which instantly made me think of Blue Steel. But so I can see Brian doing his best Zoolander with his brand new Pebble Steel in his hand.
So friend of the show, Brian, was obviously a massive fan of the original Pebble. So as soon as he saw this, he had a little jizz fest and went and bought another one.
Probably didn't help when I tweeted him and said, "This looks like you went, I know." It was like drip, drip, drip.
So he ordered one. Anyway, and I've heard several podcasts and been listening around, and it seems like if you were a fan of the original Pebble, then this is great, because this is the step on. It still doesn't look incredible, but it just looks more watch-like. And they are saying that although the internals haven't changed particularly or at all, there is future-proofing technology in there. So they will and can turn things on. It's got an app store now that will work for the old Pebble as well. And they're saying it's sort of a little bit speedier. So even though the technology is the same, the screen seems to react quicker because it's a paper technology screen, digital paper.
To me, it looked like a good version too, without alienating anybody that's got the first one, because it's basically still the same. So you're not fragmenting what small market you've got.
But that said, I did hear a talk with the maker of Pebble, and he said there are a lot of additional features in there that just aren't turned on yet. And they did with the original, where there were bits that they hadn't turned on, they've got the same with this. So over time, they will turn those extra features on. There you go. So that was wearable. And then Sony kind of come up with a wearable device as well.
Well, everybody had. So LG had one, Sony had one. There was basically everybody had a new wearable of some sorts. Most of them looking like the Fitbit Flex. So kind of rubbery plastic, just a tat on your wrist.
Yeah. Samsung came up with a ton of new tablets that were kind of named the same as old tablets and have made the tablet market in Samsung world even more confused.
the best bit I thought, and you know I love bringing this up about how Samsung copy, and there's been lots of talk about an iPad Pro in 2014. So Samsung have launched the Galaxy Tab Pro and Note Pro, which was just like, it reminded me of Ballmer standing up and saying, "We've got a slate, screw you, Apple." And Apple are like, "Yeah, but we've got an iPad." Oh no!
So
these were 12-inch tablets.
They're apparently to try and plug the gap between laptop and tablet by giving more power. Apparently they're quite heavy. And they're saying that it's more fragmentation on top of Android, really. It's they're adding extra features, and you can run side by side apps and things like that.
But it was a different UI, wasn't it? It was like a flipboard type new magazine.
They said
UI.
It's a kind of somewhere between Microsoft's Tiles.
That was it. Yeah, that's it. They've put the Tiles front end on Android,
which they said is a bit of a strange thing to do for what will be the pro market, because it's actually quite restrictive in many ways. But that's them just adding layers on top of Android, which is maybe unnecessary. But you know, they're gaining traction, so who knows? Maybe they will start leading that.
But we're forgetting the biggest event of CES.
Really?
And Samsung.
Oh yeah.
Michael Bay.
Yeah, that was a bit.
Well, I felt sorry for him.
Yeah, so he came on to talk about their new amazing TV. And was it TV he was talking about, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was the 105-inch curved TV.
Yeah, this massive thing, which does look pretty incredible. And the prompter, the teleprompt broke. So he thought, you know, I'm a director. I can wing this. And after about 2 seconds after he said, "I'm going to wing this," he kind of said, "This is broken, I'm going." He left.
And the thing is, it, when he got his stage fright, and he just thought, "I'm off." And
I felt sorry for him. Yeah.
So did I.
But it could have even been deliberate. They could have had this little brainstorming. Because if it was deliberate, it's brilliant. Because they got so much attention for that.
And see, the only bit that makes me think it might have been, he had a blog post up within half an hour explaining what happened, and I thought that's really quick.
Yeah.
You know, a director, and so fair enough. He blogs quite a bit, but I just felt
the ambulance chasers are at the scene of the accident before the crash.
Yeah.
Intel produced a mini computer as well. They're calling it a Pentium class computer that they've kind of put on an SD card, including Bluetooth and Wi-Fi.
Yeah. I just thought Intel stuff was weird because they showed you things because the other thing was Jarvis, which was their little headset that always listens and is supposed to help you. but it was all proof of concept stuff without actually doing anything. But that little thing was good. What was it? Edison, that was his name.
So just mini PC. Yeah, so little bits more. I mean, it's CES, and again, I've heard this touted around this year, is that all the journalists feel like they have to go and they must go. But it's an awfully big show, and it takes a long time to just get around and see everything. And if they feel those, I'd quite like to go 1 year, but it sounds like it becomes very choresome. You feel like you have to go and do it.
I'd like to just experience the madness because it just looks mental.
And you want to choose a good year because it must be really... Recently, there's been nothing big unless you like looking at big TVs.
Yeah. Or cars. It's become quite the car show as they start to... I think a lot of them start to... Ford, I think, went and were doing a whole lot of car things about 3-4 years ago. And others have started doing the same. So I think Audi was there...
Google were trying to round up a whole ton of people, weren't they, to do an Android type, common standard, which makes a lot of sense.
It does, but why would you want to put a crap interface in your car?
I did think actually they need to almost come up with a car API, don't they, that can actually work across anything, whether it be Apple or Android. You need that because you don't want to be limited to one or the other.
No, and the problem you've got is that. It's like, see, when you do something with a phone or a computer, it's a £500 or £1,000 buy, depending on what you buy. A car's a big purchase, so it's like for iOS and Android, I think they're saying it's like this year's cars, for iOS, I've got certain partners, Android, I've got certain partners.
Yeah.
And it's like, but that's just for new cars.
And really, the kind of functions you want to carry out in a car are pretty common, So there's no reason why you can't add an API layer over the top that then could interface with anyone. But maybe that's what will come out of this, consortium. We've reached the end, unless you want to talk about anything else.
No, because as I said, most of it just seemed to be wearables. There was quite a few things in the house. Belkin were doing like an intelligent Wi-Fi connected slow cooker. I just hope it checks that there's food inside it before you sit at work and go, yeah, start cooking my tea.
I've made you an air sandwich.
so there was things all around that were like, smart home related, but nothing, there's no big like, oh, that's the thing.
It feels like no one's got a vision yet. Where things are going, and therefore people, there's no kind of front room of tomorrow, which is got a load of things in it, like your thermostats and like your integrated sound systems that are all centrally controlled or whatever. There's no one big vision, and I think with the passing of Jobs and Bill Gates no longer in there, you've lost those visionary figures that seem to used to direct things.
Yeah,
and now we've got these individual companies all fighting each other. There's no direction.
And the thing is, Google
is insightful, isn't it?
Yeah, but and Google's obviously bought Nest. Who knows what else they'll buy this year? Imagine if they've got Nest. Imagine if they said to Philips, we're going to buy your Hue light bulbs, or we're going to do something very similar, and then start to produce the...
Yeah, because they've been moving from that software services into hardware. We've seen them with the Google Glass and the drivable computers, and now buying these robots. They're certainly headed that direction to be that more kind of company of the future almost. So we'll... Skynet.
They are going to be the new Skynet.
Okay, we might as well go the full hog today. We've come to the end of our news, but we have actually got two picks, so let's do the whole blooming lot. Everyone's been gagging to hear us again after their month off, right? Of course they have. Go on. Yeah, amazing. I've got a pick. So Ian, you start with yours, and then we'll finish with my amazing pick.
Mine is a pick for Android, which is very rare.
Mm.
And it's a game called...
You run out of things to buy on iPad.
No. No.
No, Chris. No.
No. Even today, I've just added another three apps. There's just no end to it. This is a game called Wordiest for Android. And it's a really simple little game. It's free. It is ad supported, so you do get an advert on it. But and the way it works, it presents 14 tiles, and it asks you to make the two highest scoring words you can make out of it. You sign in with your Google Plus credentials. It then compares you against 100 other people that got the same set of tiles, and then kind of ranks you based on where you came. You know, did other people get more words? And it shows you a kind of really geeky chart of, you know, what they got. You can see the words they got as well, and see for a little free game. Really addictive.
Okay, it's a word game, so I probably never will play, and I would hate it. But if you like word games, then it sounds fabulous.
Yeah, so Wordiest for Android.
Because I would be the 100th out of 100 people on that list every time.
No, you wouldn't. Some people can't even make, like, a word.
Yeah, okay, 99th then. My pick is a game, a little indie game called The Stanley Parable. And if you haven't come across it, then I would encourage that you go and pay some money to this developer for having produced a game that I actually enjoyed, which is a rare thing nowadays. I wouldn't go and... It's basically, I can't really talk too much about it other than say it's available on Mac. It's on Steam, so you can get it. It's Mac and PC compatible. It used to be a mod for Half-Life, so it's all based around sort of first-person walking around, but it's like nothing I've seen. I don't want to say any more than that because it would probably spoil it for you, but it's an incredible game that starts off quite narrow and quickly spreads. And it, yeah, it's good.
I'm on it. I've never heard of it.
Yeah, and say I wouldn't look up if you fancy doing it. Don't look up anything about it. Just go play the game. It's good.
So it's on Steam. It says here for $15.
So it's £9.99 in the UK on Steam. Obviously, it's one of those games that will eventually come up and it will be reduced down. It's kind of it will be on. I've seen it on sale recently, so it's probably going to happen again. But anyway, it's still worth £9.99. It's had me in stitches. I have been literally crying with laughter.
Wow.
Yep.
Excellent. Good pick.
There you go. Bit mysterious. And that is the end of our podcast. Thank you for listening so far. We will obviously be back next week with more and maybe on a bit more compressed timeline. If you want to find out more about us or what we do, you can do digitaloutbox.com and you can talk to us, info@digitaloutbox.com. And we're also on Twitter and Skype as Digital Outbox. I am on Twitter as CheesyUK, and you can find out about my racing, although I haven't updated it recently, academyracer.co.uk. I will have to figure out what I want to do with that blog. But anyway, that's where my racing stuff is. Ian, where can we find you?
My blog is iand.net. My blog is iand.net, and I'm on Twitter as Shweepa.
Perfecto. So thanks again for listening, and we will talk to you next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Boom. 52 minutes.
In a can.
52 minutes, and that was dropping a story as well.
Did we drop a story? What did I miss? It wasn't deliberate.
No, it wasn't. I couldn't be arsed. Sky. Targeted adverts on your TV.
Oh, yeah. Actually, I'm quite excited by that. Okay.
Because none of us will ever know.
No. How? Advertising Storrington in the wider world.
Exactly, you'll be watching some sort of big, I don't know, 24 launches in May or whatever, and you'll be watching it. It'll be some local car dealer. Buy your car.
The Marrakesh is advertising nationally.
Yeah. I'm assuming that's your local curry house.
One of them.
Yeah. Yeah. Azad videos come back from the dead and they're advertising on Sky.
We can look forward to all the cheap local ads like you see in America. Those really
hold on.
Terrible ones.
Digital Outbox could advertise that.
But where would we do?
What program?
We'd have to choose a really nice, cheap place to go. Hull. let's get big in Hull.
I was going to say Scunthorpe. and we'll beep out the C word.
Western yeah. Super there, we can get a lot of old listeners on board.
Yeah, we could do Barrow. Anyway.
Brilliant. There we go. There you go. Sky. There was another story. We're up to 54 minutes now. Should we stop? Let's stop.